Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennials and some Gen Xers from a left-wing perspective. It is the night of Friday the 27th, or probably the 28th or 29th when you hear this, Memorial Day weekend. I am Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And we got some things to talk about. We're going to get intensive on one subject that's piqued our eye. We'll talk about the presidential race a little bit, but what we mainly wanted to focus on was some recent revelations at Baylor University. Involving their football program and the leadership from the very top, led by none other than a name you might recognize, that being Ken Starr.
Yeah.
Of the
Clinton scandal fame.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Starr Report.
Yeah. The famous Starr Report. Yes. Well, Ken Starr is back in the news as president of Baylor University, where many sexual assaults were evidently covered up.
Correct.
To keep certain football players from facing any discipline and to keep them playing football, because correct, football means big money. And we're going to talk about that a little bit. Did you want me to start with some of the background?
Yeah, so here's what I want to say, first of all. A lot of the stuff we're going to talk about is stuff that's happening at most universities in this country. Whether right, it's because of athletics or it's because of the university's reputation or just bad law enforcement, there's a lot of stuff we're going to talk about today that is going to seem like repetitive or old news or stuff that you're already aware is happening, particularly if you've watched The Hunting Ground, the documentary. However, there is some new revelation about Baylor because of this report that we're going to talk about. And I'm hopeful that this report will start a sea change, something that will change the face and the sort of direction of how sexual assault is handled on college campuses. So we're going to talk about what happened. And if you're not familiar with this, you're going to be really pissed. And if you are, you're going to be like, everywhere this happens. But what's important, I think, and why we're going to really tell this story is to highlight it and then also to talk about what this report said and how scathing it was and what that might mean.
So, well, let's give a whole lot of background first.
Yep.
Baylor University, if you've never heard of it, is in Waco, Texas. It's a Baptist university and a very ardent Baptist university. I've come a very religious, conservative part of Texas and the country. And the university itself prides itself on, you know, their selling point is, well, we're not like other universities because we're very, very religious and we have this strict moral religious code and, you know, that sets us apart from everybody,
right,
and blah,
like
blah,
Baptist,
blah.
Baptist, right, or something?
That's what I just said,
yeah.
Yeah, Southern Baptist, Texas Southern Baptist, which is its own unique brand of...
Awful.
Well, yeah, let's just, for the time being, let's just say very strictly religious. Now let's talk a little football, just to give you some background. If you don't know or anything about football, Baylor plays in a conference called the Big 12. It used to be the Big 8. And they have traditional powerhouse football programs like Texas, Oklahoma, Texas Tech, used to be Texas A&M before they went to the SEC, Oklahoma State. So that area of the country,
big into football.
Big football is life there. And for years and years, really decades, Baylor's football program was sort of the doormat. They weren't very good. They got beat up on by the likes of Texas and Oklahoma and, you know, all these schools. Nebraska used to be, now Nebraska's in the Big Ten. They used to be in this conference too. So basically, enter 2007, Baylor hires a guy named Art Briles. As the head coach,
yeah,
for the football program.
Okay.
Art Briles is very big and popular in Texas. He was a famous high school coach and he was an assistant. And he's very innovative. He created this, or was one of the first pioneers of this offense that threw the ball like crazy and scored all these points. And it was very exciting. So he came in to Baylor when Baylor was the Big 12 doormat. And actually at the time, couple of years prior was like one of the worst programs in the entire country. They were like ranked dead last out of like 117 teams or close to it in the early to mid 2000s.
Okay.
So Art Briles comes in and in a couple of years just turns it completely around. And you may have heard of Robert Griffin III. He's the quarterback for Washington. He played at Baylor and a lot of, and some other guys that are now entering the NFL played for Baylor. Basically, he turned it around and made Baylor a winner. And in fact, the last couple of years, they were right on the cusp of being among the very best teams in the country. They just missed making the four-team playoff this past year. So they're basically like a perennial top 15, top 10 or 5 football program now.
So if you don't care about sports, which you guys know I don't really, this matters because we're talking about a university I'm just saying for the non-sports people.
Yeah.
It matters because sports brings in a lot of money.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
There's a lot of money behind.
Huge money.
Yeah.
So where Baylor was drawing 20 or 30,000 people a game and selling probably next to no merchandise or any tie-ins or anything like that, and forget about, you know, TV money and bowl money and all that, now they built a brand new expensive stadium and they're filling it with like 70,000 fans.
Right. So we're talking about billions, probably millions, maybe
millions.
Millions.
Millions. Okay. And millions of dollars pumped into a university means new buildings, new this, new that, television revenue from all these football games, on jersey sales and pennants and t-shirts, and it's a cash cow. It's a money train.
Right. So when there is money, there's always the potential for corruption and scandal.
Well, that's
at any level of anything.
Well, hold on. We need to back up a little more.
Hang on. I'm just saying the reason that this is important, this background, is because there's so much money involved. And whenever there's that much money and sort of prestige and status, there's the potential for something to go wrong.
Okay. Well, let me get a little more football intensive just to connect the dots here with what you're saying.
Yeah.
For a college football program, in the pros, it's a little different, where you can sign a bunch of free agents and you can draft guys, and for a lot of teams they can turn things around in just a year or two. College, it's much more difficult. You get 85 kids on scholarship, and you know it takes a long time to build a football program. Baylor did it very, very quickly. Well, how are some ways that you do that? Well, let me think about this for a second. Let's say you're a big-time recruiter, a potential big-time recruit. You're a great football player, but maybe some of the big teams in the area like Texas and Texas Tech and Oklahoma didn't recruit you and passed on you. They, we don't want this kid in our football program. Now, why might that be? Well, maybe he's got off-field problems. Maybe he's got sexual assault rumors or issues.
Mm-hmm.
Or
pending litigation.
Right. Or maybe they started at a school like a Texas or Nebraska and then got kicked, or Penn State, and got kicked out. And I've still got 3 or 4 years to play football. Where am I going to go? Well, Baylor will take you with open arms. Now, why did they get kicked out? Maybe Baylor didn't know or didn't care.
So there are two specific cases where this happened.
Right. Mm-hmm. Where this very specifically I just talked about seems to have been the case.
Yeah, so this kid, and you're going to have to pronounce his last name because I was reading it and I don't know how to pronounce it.
I don't even know the names, to be honest.
Okay, I'll pull them up really quick. Yeah. So there were two kids that were essentially expelled from other schools, one from Boise and
or
one...
Or forced out. One from Boise State, one from Penn State.
One from Boise State, one from Penn State.
Right.
And the allegation is that, Sam
Ukwuchao,
we're going to say, I don't really know how to pronounce it, from Boise State, and then Sean Oakman from Penn State, both of them were recruited by Baylor after having been...
Kicked off their respective
kicked
teams.
Off, kicked out
of their
colleges.
Schools. Yeah.
Yeah. And the reason for both of those people being kicked out of their schools was because of rape and domestic violence allegations.
Mm-hmm.
And Baylor, it's unclear if they knew that that was the case. I think everyone kind of thinks that it was, but we don't know exactly. Said basically like, whatever, they're really good at football.
Right.
So,
and we need to build our program quickly, yes, and we don't have these third and fourth year guys in the pipeline like Texas does or some of these other schools.
And so for people that don't know a lot about sports, particularly college sports, I want you to tell me about a couple of things.
Yeah.
Because we talked about this the other night, and it gave me a lot of clarity. So there are rules about being a college sports athlete, right? Yeah. So you don't get paid.
No.
But you get like a full ride.
Yes.
And it must be...
And you
be...
get a per diem for food and yeah, some, but it's not much.
Right. And so it must be difficult for these colleges to build sort of sports teams that last if we know that most of these kids are... like the longest that you could be on the scholarship is 4 years. And a lot of them, you were telling me, stay for a year or maybe 2 years.
No, that's basketball. Football, you have to stay for at least three.
Three. So, but yeah, even then, I mean, you don't get like your quarterback for 7 years. You get right, him for two, three,
well, unless he's
maybe
got some injuries, maybe five, and in rare cases, six. But for the most part, it's 4 years.
But really, it's a high turnover.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that is a struggle.
Oh, yeah.
That they have.
You have to, that's why coaches, when they're not coaching, are constantly recruiting new kids.
Yeah. Yeah. So, because there's so much money to be made, even though the people that actually perform the sport do not make any money.
Well, from a head coach's perspective, yes, a lot of them sort of see the bigger picture in terms of we need to bring in revenue, but they're thinking about winning football games, and then it's the presidents, the Ken Stars, who are thinking dollar signs.
Right.
As a result of having a winning football program.
Okay. So here's what happened at Baylor. We haven't really gotten to this.
Yeah. Well, we had to give a good background because I know a lot of our listeners don't know the first thing about how this could come about and why football matters. And so we're telling you and explaining the anatomy
and so,
how we got here.
And I think to that end, to say that the football program at Baylor became really important to the school, to the university, to the administration in a way that it maybe wasn't before or isn't at other places is important to note too, because
there's
so much money.
Because of the money.
Yeah. So there's been some allegations about sexual assault and domestic violence on campus of students by football players and by other people as well. And so there was an independent investigation that happened.
Yes.
By a law firm. And the name of the law firm is, I want to say, Pepper Mills.
Yeah.
And so this law firm has done these before and has been kind of criticized for being a little bit too kind to the university system or whoever they were investigating.
Mm-hmm.
And so they came out with this report about Baylor, and man, is it scathing.
Yeah.
It is the first of its kind. It is the first report that's official that is not from the administration and it's not from local law enforcement, that is from an independent authorized agency essentially saying here's what happened at Baylor. And it is
Well, do you want to walk us through some of the specifics?
I do. So it's pretty scathing, like I said. They went into the school and they had kind of unlimited access to the records and to the students and to the administration and the staff.
And to interview personnel,
people,
witnesses,
absolutely,
complainants.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they came back with a bunch of stuff, and we're going to get into what the fallout from it was, which is pretty great. But first of all, they said that Baylor football staff prevented meaningful investigation of multiple accusations of sexual assault and dating violence by failing to report them outside of the athletic department.
So they covered up rapes and assaults.
That's correct. So what happened was girls would come in and say, you know, this happened to me. And they would go to sort of the coach or the assistant coach or someone on the athletic department team and say, this is what happened with one of your players. And they would then do a number of things. So number one, they would meet personally with the victim and their parents and then not report what they said. Number two, they would give the illusion of responsiveness
to the complainants. That's the worst part to me.
And then do nothing. Yeah. So they would basically tell the parents and the students, like, here's what we're doing.
We're going to take care of this.
Here's what we're going to do in step A, B, C, and D, and do none of those steps.
Absolutely none.
Absolutely zero things.
And that actually goes to Ken Starr personally.
It does.
He met with some of the victims and pretended to be very concerned and said, we're going to take all these steps, yes, and did nothing.
And I can tell you from my college experience, I had one of those, and it was exactly that, which is that I was promised a lot of things and nothing happened.
Yeah.
Number three was they were conducting internal investigations about the matter,
mm-hmm,
without training or authority, and we're going to get to why that is later. Quote, which improperly discredited complainants and denied them the right to a fair trial, impartial, and informed investigation.
Gee, that sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that happened. And then the other thing that they did was actively diverted cases from criminal investigation or Baylor's own student conduct review.
We can't even let the student honor code. Oh, well, we'll get to the whole honor code thing, too. That was, uh-huh, another thing that's, uh-huh, big and reminded us of the BYU thing that, yep, we just talked about like, yep, a month ago.
Yeah. So that was the first thing that they found out, was essentially like, you know, if you reported this to the athletic department, you were given a big old, like, oh, that's horrible, we'll do something about it. Literally nothing was done. Mm-hmm. And they said, hey, by the way, don't report this to anybody else, please. Like, right. We'll take care of it internally.
Right. We're going to keep it in-house.
And then nothing happened.
Yeah.
So the second thing is what we were talking about earlier, which is what they're calling the failure to use consistent player transfer protocols.
Well, we can kind of skip that part. We talked about that. Basically, yeah, they took in kids that with any kind of rap sheet.
They knew for sure, right, this kid, Sam Okuwachu,
mm-hmm,
from Boise State, was later convicted of raping a Baylor athlete.
Right.
And Sean Oakman from Penn State, who would be reportedly investigated during his playing career at Baylor and arrested afterward for a separate incident.
And this wasn't even the guy
from
ESPN's Outside the Lines report. That's another guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're,
so
yeah,
they really literally just said, like, I don't care if you rape people, just be a good football player.
Basically.
Okay. So that was a thing. Then we have Title IX.
Hmm.
This is kind of like, makes me angry. The whole thing makes me angry, but this Title IX stuff is really egregious. So Pepper, which is the law firm, found that Baylor's efforts to implement Title IX were slow, ad hoc, and hindered by a lack of institutional support and engagement by senior leadership. Essentially, yeah, what happened was they did not have... So Title IX is the civil rights law that essentially says that, like, women and men are to be treated equally.
It says
on
a lot.
College campus. It says a lot.
And it has a lot of far-reaching things. And a lot of people complain that it hurts sports in the sense that it means equal number of sports teams. But importantly in this case is it is supposed to help prevent this very sort of thing from happening.
It is. It's supposed to prevent a hostile environment for women in college.
Right.
It's also supposed to do things like, if you want to have a women's basketball team and you have a men's basketball team, they have to be funded.
Right.
Both of them have to be funded. Not necessarily equally, but to the degree that you can exist.
Right.
That women are allowed to have the same treatment at colleges that men have, which,
right,
seems very basic, but is still not happening. So the Title IX stuff was really upsetting for me because the deadline for implementing all of the Title IX regulations was 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And Baylor did not implement them. I mean, they never actually did, but they didn't even get a Title IX coordinator until November of 2014.
Which has to be in violation of federal law.
It absolutely is. And even then, so before then, what they were doing was they were having other senior administration officials filling those roles. So they had like five guys or gals or whoever doing this job.
Have the football coach teach history.
Exactly right.
Right.
And there's definitely the implication in this report that these people were not only not trained on Title IX and not qualified
but
to do
couldn't
this,
even give it serious time or consideration.
But also had no time at all. They had no time to be doing any of this. Even right. though there's five of them, they have entire other full-time jobs and in some cases two full-time jobs.
Yeah.
And they had no time to implement this program. And there's definitely an implication that the school knew that and didn't care.
Right.
Just thought like, oh, who
well,
cares?
Clearly they didn't care.
Who
so,
cares?
I mean, the bottom line is
matter.
Clearly Baylor wasn't the least bit interested in Title IX whatsoever.
And just thought like, it doesn't matter. Like, who cares about that? That's
right.
that's not important at all. So that's upsetting. Quote, the university did not provide sufficient institutional support. Oh, that's a dog growling. Stop it. the university did not provide sufficient support, institutional support for Title IX functions. So the report gets into how unqualified these people were who were trying to run the Title IX program
mm-hmm.
to be people running the Title IX program. They
right.
were completely untrained. They had no idea what they were doing. They had no idea. Like, they weren't trained on sexual violence. They weren't trained on sexual assault. They weren't trained on anything. They were just like
victim advocacy, anything.
Nothing. They were just the people that worked somewhere else that they were like, can you like put this on here as a thing you do? And they're like, sure.
Right.
And then they would get pulled into these accusations occasionally when the athletic department wasn't the first person that was contacted.
Right.
And they were completely unqualified
mm-hmm.
and would often do investigations that made the complainant seem, you know, unfounded or you know, not reputable or whatever, without any training reason. Like, they just were like, well, she seems like a slut. Essentially.
Exactly.
She seems kind of slutty and she drinks, so probably
well, we haven't
it's
even,
not true.
We haven't even gotten to the whole honor code violation victim as a suspect thing. I don't know if you were going to get to that or if now is the time to bring
ahead.
It up.
Why don't you go
well,
ahead?
Well, we talked about at Brigham Young University,
yes.
you had...
Big Mormon school, right?
Right. One, it's been a pattern of this, but it was one woman, young woman in particular
yeah.
who had to go on record and say, I brought these sexual assault allegations forward and I was treated like the suspect because I violated the honor code against drinking or commingling with... you know, a male student, and so I was put on trial before they even wanted to hear
yep.
about the rape
yep.
allegations. Well, guess what?
Yep.
Baylor, being the good Baptist university it is, has a similar, quote, honor code. So women that were coming to the university and saying I was sexually assaulted, like, oh, well, what were you doing? Were you in this boy's dorm room? Was there
yeah.
alcohol?
So this is specifically, I'm going to quote the report and then let you finish.
Right.
Prior to August of 2015, Baylor did not have a policy that would allow those who are reporting Title IX complaints to avoid punishment for admitting to using drugs or alcohol.
Right.
So it's exactly the same thing.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm. So the university's first priority, if you're a woman...
Who was raped.
And reports it. The first thing, the only thing is seemingly that this university, like BYU, cares about is, were you...
Doing something
you shouldn't have been doing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Victim-blaming rape culture to the nth degree.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if the dude who raped you was doing something he shouldn't have been doing, like, I don't know, raping you.
Right.
Or probably also drinking or doing drugs. It matters the most that we make sure... that you, as the reporter of this assault, wasn't doing anything that we kind of frown upon. And
right.
apparently we frown upon women drinking more than men raping.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is a thing. And that is finally something you would have thought from the BYU case people would have learned. Now, a lot of this stuff probably happened before a lot of that came to light. But, you know, at a certain point, I mean, it just needs to be a federal law that... You know, when a woman comes with a sexual assault allegation, fuck your honor code. Seriously,
yeah.
just fuck it.
It has nothing to do with... Okay, here's the difference.
Now, look, if you
Hang
can
on.
Prove...
No. Hang on.
Yeah.
I want to point something out real quick. Rape is a crime
mm-hmm.
that is illegal under the law
yeah.
of the state, city, country, everything.
Yes.
your fucking honor code that says I'm not allowed to touch boys or drink booze. Not a law.
No.
Doesn't matter. So here's the thing that I... So that's a thing, first of all.
Right.
Let's do the criminal thing first, please. Let's have that be the priority.
Yes.
The second thing that I would really like to talk to you about, because this is where my brain melts down. I don't give a shit if these athletes are suspended or kicked out of school or nothing happens in the case of Baylor. Literally, they just don't even investigate the case at all. They just say, fuck you. I would like to understand why in organizations such as this, and the NFL, the Catholic Church, Baylor universities, people are committing crimes that are illegal, that are criminal offenses.
Mm-hmm.
Where is law enforcement? Well, why are these people not being charged with crimes? I don't give a shit if you get expelled. You're going to get kicked out of school when you go to jail for raping her.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care about if you get fired, if you get suspended. No. Why are you not? Where's law enforcement?
Universities have their own sort of policies for handling and reporting, and that's going to change, obviously. But, and some of them have their own police forces.
They do. We had where I went to school.
Now it's not these women's fault, but what they did, because what they had been taught was, this thing happened to me, I need to go to the university officials. What these women should have done is call the police immediately and F.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah, but then they might get suspended or expelled. I mean,
but I don't even think that was their thinking. Their thinking was, right, I've been told the university takes care of me and they care mm-hmm. about me and they've got me back.
I'll go call the university police and they'll take care of me.
That I'm sure was in their student handbook and their orientation.
Absolutely.
If anything happens to you on campus, you call this number and, you know, we'll take care of you
and we have our own law enforcement. And so
what we have to start teaching women, no matter what kind of school they go to, where it's Mormon or Baptist or Scientologist or what, you know, Trump University,
your state college, any Harvard, I don't care.
ITT Tech, you know, whatever the hell it is. If something happens, just call the cops.
Yeah.
And that's no guarantee of anything, too, as we know, unfortunately. No. But at least you got a chance there.
Maybe.
Maybe.
So in that documentary that I watched, The Hunting Ground, they talked to this ex-university law enforcement official.
Uh-huh.
And he quit specifically because when women came to him and reported cases of sexual assault, he was not permitted to really investigate them because it was a problem for the university's reputation. They had to release this report every year of how many rapes and how many burglaries and how many whatevers.
Right.
And people wouldn't want to send their kids to these schools and where there was a lot of raping going on. So they would just cover it up. And he wasn't allowed to really investigate. And he wasn't allowed to go to the proper law enforcement authorities to arrest these people. And he just said, like, after like 20 years, like, I just saw so many women get swept under the rug to protect the university's reputation that I just couldn't take it anymore. And like, he's an advocate now of like changing the system.
So this is like a textbook example of that.
Yes.
And wasn't that in the report too for Baylor?
Yes.
That they were worried about that.
Correct.
As well.
So what happened was the report specifically pointed out that a lot of administrators that talked to victims specifically said to them, or they said, not said to them, I'm going to quote the report, they discouraged victims from going to law enforcement
mm-hmm.
or from reporting it outside of the athletics department and exactly. or university administration department, depending on where they reported it initially or where it ended up, and said, like, it's not good for you if you do that.
Mm.
And so it's not a matter of, oh, we looked into it and we thought she was slutty. It's a matter of literally them saying, like, don't tell anyone this happened because it will be bad for you.
Well, let's talk about some specific cases.
At Baylor?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't have a lot of those, but do you have...
Well, here's one example. There was a girl moving in. She was, I think, moving into an apartment on or near campus.
Okay.
And she was moving some furniture, and one of these football players, not one of the two you mentioned, another guy.
Okay.
Saw her moving this furniture and offered to help. And she said, great, that's great. That's very nice of you. And so helped her move some furniture in and then sort of cornered her and pinned her in her apartment And she said, okay, you need to leave now, and you need to stop. And he started groping her and eventually raped her right there. She reported it. She was told it will be taken care of. And literally, like you said, literally nothing happened. Nothing happened. This guy went on and yeah. played his whole season and what have you. Another example was another girl, I think, who was an athlete who actually, after being stonewalled by the athletic department and campus police and everybody else, went appealed directly to Ken Starr.
Nice. Okay.
And Ken Starr met with her and acted very, very concerned and very, you know, sort of shocked, and said he was going to get to the bottom of this, and then nothing happened.
Yeah.
And nothing happened with her. And those are the ones, just a couple on the top of my head, but I mean, it is lots of women over the last several years.
That yeah. Yeah. So, man, I have a lot to say about that. The first thing would be, I just want to think about, I want everybody to quickly think about what it must feel like to be a 19-year-old kid away from home for the first time at college, and some dude offers to help you move your furniture, mm-hmm. and you're really thankful. And
or then walk you back from class. Walk you
back to school or drive you home. Yeah, or whatever, you're tipsy,
offers to drive you home.
Whatever it is. And then you're raped. And it's the thing you've been told your whole life, trust me, that is probably going to happen. And there's a million reasons that you can prevent it. And really, that's not true. And it's horrible. It's the worst. I mean, it's one of the worst things. And then you think to yourself, you know, I just don't want this to happen to anybody else. Or I want him to be punished, or whatever it is that compels you to go tell someone.
Right.
And when you do that, it doesn't matter. They listen to you. They make you feel like you matter in the best case. In mm-hmm. the worst case, they ask you, were you drinking? What were you dressed like? Maybe mm-hmm. you shouldn't go to frat parties. Maybe you shouldn't drink. Maybe you shouldn't talk to boys. Maybe you shouldn't be a woman in the world, essentially.
Basically.
And you walk away from that, and then you go to your political science 101 class the next morning, and that guy is sitting there, and he'll sit there with you for the next 4 or 3 or 2 years or however long it is, in your classes, in your campus, in the dorms, in your public spaces. He'll be there because no one did anything. Mm-hmm. And you did the right thing all along, and nothing happened to him. He's fine. He's walking around like nothing happened. He's walking around. He's going to graduate college. He's going to go get a job and rape some secretary and probably his wife and God knows who else. And all you can do is try to survive and avoid him and imagine the toll that takes on women. And then think, oh, and we did that because football and we money. Don't want our college to have a reputation for raping. I mean, what are we doing? This is not one woman.
And this is not one university. This if you is, think this no, is isolated to Baylor.
It's not.
This has just happened to have been in the news the last few yeah. days and weeks.
I mean, we're in Colorado, and CU was on the list
yes.
of one of the top schools who have covered up
yeah, there was a big assault. Scandal with that a few years ago, I remember.
I mean, this is happening. This is systemic. This mm-hmm. is happening to like 1 in 3 college girls. It's crazy.
Well, let's talk about... See, in my mind, what Baylor did was, in a way, worse. If you were a rape victim and you went and you could tell that you were being treated with disdain and indifference, then at least you'd know where you stand. Okay, well, they don't care and they're not going to help me. And then if you were so inclined...
But this foe, or, oh my God, we're so upset.
That's
we're
going to
take care of it.
That's worse. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In my mind.
When I reported one of my professors for a lot of things, I was not sexually assaulted, thank God. But he was just a really unqualified, terrible kind of guy. And we can get into that some other time. But I reported it to the chair of the sociology department at CSU. And I got the same exact runaround. Oh my God, that's terrible. Really, give me details. And I had this letter. Mm-hmm. And I said, here's all the details that's in this letter. And I passed it to the chair of the sociology department. And he literally didn't touch it. and had his secretary who was in the room push it back toward me and said, I don't actually need that, but I can assure you that this person will not be teaching next year. And I was graduating and I was like, okay, like I didn't know. And I left that room thinking, okay, good. Something's going to be done about this person, right? And he, to this day, teaches the same class at the university. And the reason that that person didn't want to take that letter was because he didn't want documentation mm-hmm. of the meeting that we'd had.
Yeah.
And imagine if... I know how I feel about that as just a sort of like intellectual argument and like a general like, this is a terrible garbage person. Imagine if that person had raped me, yeah. how I would feel about the lack of action from the administration who had assured me that something would be done.
Yeah.
So I really...
And I'm not exactly sure what's happening now, Baylor. I think Art Briles is going to be fired. He's going to take the fall.
Yes.
How much involvement he had is unclear, but most assuredly he had to know about these allegations involving his players, and Definitely. He did very little to nothing as far as I've read. Yes. Ken Starr heard some rumors he might be forced out, but now I'm reading that's probably not going to happen.
Okay, so what I heard about this was that he is currently the president of Baylor University.
Yes.
He's stepping down.
Oh, he is.
He's only going to be He's going to be like the Queen of England versus the Prime Minister.
Oh,
he's
like the provost chancellor, or the chancellor.
And he's going to still teach his law classes there.
Oh, great. Well,
but he's not going to be the president anymore. Yeah. Art Briles is fired. And then there's another guy. And then like 11 other people that were a part of the athletics department in like the sort of like coaches, head coaches, assistants, whatever,
mm-hmm.
that were involved that are having punishments. We think we don't know what those are. That could be like... You're suspended for 5 days. I don't know.
Well, Baylor released their own report, and it was real Weasley. It was full of non-specifics and non-sequiturs and, you know, just very general, like, oh, we're going to do so much better.
Yeah.
You know, it sucked. And you even had, as recently as yesterday, you had assistant coaches going on Twitter basically attacking the victims and...
Yeah.
defending the coaches and you, none of you know what you're talking about.
Well, because this is what one of the things the reports points out, which was that they did do investigations within the athletic department. But they okay, so a football coach is qualified to investigate a sexual assault in what world?
Right.
And they're definitely not biased and couldn't possibly every time find that the victim is
Well, this is what happened at Florida State a couple years ago with Jameis Winston. You remember this, right?
No.
Jameis Winston, the star quarterback, he now plays for the Tampa Bay Bucks. He was accused of rape, and basically it was swept under the rug, pushed aside, completely mishandled. Eventually that did go to trial, and he was vindicated, but the only witnesses to that crime were his teammates.
Right.
So he got off.
Yep.
In fact, I think he's even trying to countersue civilly his accuser. But it was
wasn't
the same.
There another guy? I want to say from Florida, and I'm sorry to our listeners that I just remembered this. There was like a Radio Lab or This American Life story about it was like an expose essentially about this athlete who was systemically like. Drugging and raping girls, very Bill Cosby, but like from clubs, and I think it was in Florida.
Sure.
And they finally like there was enough like in because there was an interstate problem. He was in like Las Vegas and he was in Florida and he was in California, and they finally got enough women on enough. He was like escalating, so it was like four girls in a night
mm-hmm.
as opposed to one in a week, you know.
Jeez.
And they finally like got together, and when this happened, this was like 2 months ago, but I asked you about it, and you happened to know who I was talking about, and maybe we can put it in the show notes when I find out. But
I can't remember. Oh, Darren Sharper.
Yes, yes. Okay. Yeah.
That was crazy, that story.
That is crazy, that story. But the fact that he got away with it for so long in so many different, you know, counties and states and cities and places that was like, you know, there's a certain power to... fame and to money, and no one wanted to make him look bad if maybe she was lying, and
he was
like,
also like seen as like the you know, the great charity guy, and he's very well liked in the community, and he was well spoken, and he was being groomed to be an NFL analyst and all the things. So.
And then it turned out that he was
serial rapist, a crazy serial rapist,
like a crazy escalating serial rapist. Yeah. So I want to go back to the point of law enforcement.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about not just rape, but also domestic violence, because I remember when, and I don't remember his name, and I'm sure you'll know it, the guy who punched his wife in the elevator. And
Ray Rice.
Okay. Ray Rice. They
gave him a 2-game suspension.
But here's my question.
Yeah.
Like, I don't give a shit about his suspension. I want to understand what happens when there's a video of someone assaulting someone so violently that the person is rendered, like, passed out and lifeless.
Okay, well, that's and a state-by-state issue. I know what you're getting at.
It's not. That's illegal. Is it not?
His wife refused to press charges.
Okay. But it doesn't matter. So the refusing to press charges is a state-by-state thing, which makes me fucking crazy.
Right.
But why is law enforcement not more involved in these things? It seems to me that when there are institutions involved, be it the Catholic Church or the NFL or the Boy Scouts or Baylor University or Yale or these organizations that seem to have some kind of power, that law enforcement lets them, like, quote, handle things internally, and I don't understand that.
I think you know the answer to that.
I don't understand why.
The Archbishop is probably friends with the Chief of Police. They probably, you know, go
and Roger Goodell is, you know, probably donated $100 million to the police whatever
benevolent
fund.
Yeah.
And, but, okay, so then here's my question. Baylor's located in what, Illinois? Is that
Baylor.
Right? Baylor University is located.
Waco.
Oh, Texas. Okay. Well, that's less good. I was thinking about this report, and I was thinking about the Attorney General of Texas. And I'm thinking, if I'm the Attorney General of Texas...
The guy that's under indictment or under investigation?
See, if it was somewhere not Texas. I don't know, or like the district attorney of the city, or anybody that has any sort of...
Well, it's still so discretionary, right?
Why is someone not saying, hey, fucking Waco Police Department, please go to this community, this school. All this evidence of all these people reporting all these crimes that were never reported to us. Can you please go there? The statute of limitations has not passed. Can you please go there and interview these women and arrest some people who are raping people?
They did.
Why
is what I'm telling
that
you.
Not happening?
They did, eventually.
They haven't at Baylor, have they?
Yes. All these guys are either in jail or have trial pending.
There's like 3.
Right.
We're talking about like hundreds of reports of sexual assault that were not investigated.
No, that makes it worse, because most of it was 3 or 4 different guys that were serial rapists.
Right. That's because they kept getting away with it.
But eventually the cops did, and they were being stonewalled or not even told about these allegations from the university. So in this case, I don't think it's as much depend on why didn't the cops do anything in terms of the university and the athletic departments very specifically kept this away from the cops so that these guys would not be prosecuted.
So I did not know that piece of information that law enforcement actually did come in.
Yeah,
and
I thought
say,
you
like,
saw the outside the lines thing, because that guy was being interviewed from prison.
I did not.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes me feel better. What does
No, these guys aren't
better,
still walking in the streets for the most
is
part.
Is that's an exception. That when these things come out, that there's been this rampant sexual violence.
Oh, no, that doesn't
violence.
Make it okay, because these guys got away with it for 2 or 3 years.
No, of course not. But it makes me feel better that at least law enforcement was came in and said, like,
eventually,
I don't really care. You're still illegal to rape people. You go to jail now. Great.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases, that doesn't happen. I mean, there are so many cases of, like, of this happening on college campuses all throughout the country, in many institutions, where there just isn't, like, it's like, oh, well, he lost his job. He was making $100 million a year. What do you want? And I'm like, I want him in jail. That's what I want. I don't give a shit about his money.
Well, it was just determined the other day that Cosby, the trial is going to go forward.
Right. But I mean, there's all these athletes that are like, he lost his job and he did this and he did that.
Hey, isn't that enough?
No, yeah, it's no. No. If I raped someone, no one would be like, oh, you got fired. I would go to jail.
Yeah.
It's a crime against another person. It's a violent crime. These people need to be held accountable. And I would also say that the administration officials who were specifically not reporting to law enforcement and not telling anyone and all of that stuff, that there's criminal liability there too.
In well, you would like, think. That's still unclear sort of, where we go from there.
Impeding investigation or, I can't think of the word right now, but there's definitely, there could be some there criminal be. Charges there.
Well,
I think.
We'll see. I mean, there's still more shoes to drop in this case, I would think, and I would hope that they don't just fire a football coach, shuffle some things around, and then business as usual.
Well, I was listening to this podcast that was linked to an article that you sent me about this. And they were talking about how potentially like the assistant coach, one of them could be the new coach. And this guy brought up like, no, like, like if you're the assistant coach to this guy,
they should clean house.
You definitely knew too.
But they're not going to because they want to keep that train running.
That's what they said, which I thought was so profound. Which they said was, you know, they weren't a great team for a while. Then they got this guy, Art Briles, and he really turned the team around. And this guy said, it seems to me that they sold their soul to be good at something.
Yeah.
They sold their soul for football. And no their matter
priority,
what it took.
And their number one priority right now is to stay really good while doing enough cosmetic changes to make it seem as though you're really addressing the problem.
But what does that mean for us? That you didn't sell your soul. What you did is you sold the lives and bodies of countless women to be good at football.
It parallels the Jerry Sandusky Penn State thing.
It does.
A little bit.
It does.
I think that was more a closed circle of people who knew and didn't do anything.
And this is a much broader group
of people who
didn't do anything.
Right.
But I just think that we have to kind of step back, especially if you know, you love sports, and I know you love sports. But I don't think that you, as a person who loves sports more than anybody I know, would ever think that being a great football team...
Oh, of course not.
...should be more important than the lives and body autonomy and non-raping of women.
Of course not. And you know what? There's plenty of very, very good football teams who manage to do both.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't heard issues like this at Stanford. I'm sure Stanford probably has their own...
They do have a lot of rape
sexual
issues.
...sexual assault problems.
Yeah, but not necessarily from...
But not that they're covering up a bunch of football players doing it. Hopefully. No, you know, if I find that out tomorrow,
so
then
sort
I'll
sort of
like
all universities have this rape issue. It's not necessarily about athletics. It's actually about sort of the reporting and not wanting to be the rape school because no one will send their kids there.
Uh-huh.
And it's systemic throughout the entire country. This athletics department thing seems to really be specific to schools that count on that, like that are like the top
A lot of schools count on it.
Sure, and it's rampant. It's rampant throughout the country,
mm-hmm.
especially with schools that
but
have
you don't have
high-powered
to
athletic
build
departments.
A winning football. You know, Baylor's, like I said, Baylor was a little bit different because they built a powerhouse football team almost overnight.
Yeah.
And that's really difficult to do in college. And one way you do that is you bring in all these questionable characters who are great football players.
But what else
maybe,
are they?
What else are they?
Why are they,
that are
why
transferring
aren't they playing
from other teams?
At Duke or whatever the good places are.
Duke's, well, that's basketball.
Okay. But. I don't know. I don't know, baby. I don't know. But the other thing that I thought was really interesting was that they were saying that Art Briles, which is the coach who got fired, was one of the more powerful college football coaches in terms of, like, he shaping the university and sort of his control over the department and all
there.
That stuff.
Like, God there.
They were saying, like, what are we going to remember about him in 25 years? And this one guy was saying, like, I think you're going to remember both. I think, because one guy was is he going to be a Bill Cosby? Nobody remembers the Cosby Show anymore. He's just a rapist.
Well, unfortunately, that's the legacy of Joe Paterno at Penn State,
and, well,
too.
It will be, because, and fuck that guy. Well, Sandusky, I guess, was technically the rapist, but Paterno knew about it.
And they've taken that statue.
They think he knew about it. That's not 100% confirmed, but he probably knew.
Definitely did.
Oh, he did hear about it.
Yeah, he heard about it and didn't do his shit. And they've taken his statue down. Yeah. And like, I know he was like the greatest college whatever.
And he coached until he literally dropped dead. Yeah.
Yes. Thing. And I feel bad for the people who live in that town. And there's an entire documentary that I watched about like the trauma of the people who live there and the people that go to Penn State too, and like all the stuff from him. But at the same time, like, man, do I not feel as bad for you as I do for the children that were victimized by this man and the people who allowed it to happen.
And all covered up because of the football program was life so and religion good. And the cash cow.
And when can we stop that? When can we stop making something as trivial and arbitrary and as fun as it is, not important as sports, more important than women and children's
it won't be the free
sexual autonomy.
It won't be the free market, I'll tell you that, because the percentage of Baylor fans who are not going to go to games next year because of this is infinitesimal.
Yeah.
A couple, sure. You know.
Oh, can I ask you one other thing that this podcast brought up?
Yeah.
Which was that the kids who were drafted into this program in 2016 before this scandal happened, they were arguing about whether or not those kids should be able to be let out of their contracts and go somewhere else, considering what happened, because there's going to be such like a scandal and like these kids' careers and potential future lives are going to be affected
by this.
Yeah,
the non-rapist kids.
The kids who haven't even come to this college yet that are like, 2016.
Oh, their letters of intent.
Come in. Yeah.
Well, that's up to the NCAA. I mean, they could do that.
But they were saying they never do. They were like, they never do. They're always looking out for the coaches.
They did for
the
Penn
colleges.
State kids. They did for the Penn State
they
kids.
They did. I think they should for the Baylor kids. It's not the fault of these high school seniors. They got into one of
the better... non-rapey ones. Some of them might
Who not, right? But, like, let's let some other college... I mean, I just think it's only fair if you really were great and you had the choice between, like, three top schools and you picked Baylor because of whatever reason, and then this happens. Like, this could derail your whole life.
Yeah, this argument comes up a lot, and it came up with Miami when Miami had a scandal. Had nothing to do with rape. Had to do with kids getting impermissible lobster dinners and trips on boats, which... Right, but you had... Because it's Miami, you had these ESPN people pontificating, they should shut down the football program. That's such horrible. And it was literally about kids getting lap dances and impermissible steak dinners.
Oh.
Well, they shouldn't care, right?
We care more about that, I bet, than the raping.
Yeah, no, they literally did.
Yeah.
And don't get me started about that. And then for another parallel, a couple years ago, you had two University of Miami football players that were charged with... I think basically raping a girl that was passed out, and they were kicked off the team and out of school immediately.
And did they go to jail?
I bet not. No, they at trial. I think it wound up not going to trial, and they went into pretrial diversion or something like that. But they got kicked out of school and off the team immediately.
This is what I'm saying. That is good and should happen, but that's not enough. It's still a fucking crime. If you're not a student athlete at a major school and you rape somebody, there's no like, well, maybe I can.
I mean, I don't remember the specifics
your boss
of that case.
But I'm saying that it doesn't matter, right?
They were
this
charged.
This is what happens constantly.
Right.
It's not like if you're an average Joe and you rob a liquor store that they're like, I'm going to call your boss and you might get suspended and you might not go to school anymore. They're like, here's a charge of fucking robbery and you're going to go to jail. That's what happens to normal folks on the street.
Well, it happened the other
Somehow,
way around.
There's like this disconnect with athletes and celebrities, and like, why is Sean Penn not in jail? Why is Chris Brown not in jail? Like, there's like this weird disconnect with law enforcement that's like, well, they got publicly shamed and they lost their job. No, it's not. It's still a crime to beat, rape, murder.
Well, and these guys got arrested and charged. So when it got to trial, for whatever reason, it went off the rails. And I don't know the details of that story. Whereas the Jameis Winston, it took them like a year and a half to ever get charged.
Yeah.
And then they tried to do it with their own little student council
and
thing.
Then the Darren,
and they said, are you happy now? And the
Sharper,
girl's lawyer said
whatever,
no.
Guy? Yeah, he got away with it for like 2-3 years.
Yeah, it was
raping,
a long time.
Like, serially raping people. And they were like, well, he's a famous football player. He probably didn't do it. And then finally they were like, all right, so 6-4 different states have reports of him doing this to like 25 women.
Yeah.
I guess we should probably arrest
him. That's what it took, right?
I mean,
if it was one
Jesus
or two, then nothing.
Christ. It's like Cosby.
Yeah.
Oh, just one woman accused you of rape.
Well, that is its own unique brand of crazy, serial drugging, raping. I mean, I think most of these guys is the old classic, you know, pin a woman in a corner and think you have a right to her, and
yeah,
you know, not that that's any
male sexual entitlement
better somehow, but
nope.
I mean, that's those are the exceptions in most rape cases, you know.
Yeah.
But it's ridiculous how Sharper got away with it for 3 years and Cosby got away with it for 50.
50.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break.
Yes.
And we are going to talk a little bit about the present state of politics and all that jazz.
We're going to get a little lighter, so just stay with us.
Or not. But don't get anywhere. We will be right back. Welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. So, shifting gears a little bit.
a little more lighthearted, hopefully?
I don't know. The Democratic primary is still going on-ish.
Oh, my God.
It's getting stupid now.
Oh, my God.
The Sanders campaign is suing or demanding that Barney Frank and the other guy stepped down because they don't fail the progressive purity test of the day.
And they're, like, in Clinton's back pocket, and so...
And they're suing in California to try to get already sent-in mail-in ballots thrown out. Or it's just, I'm over it. I'm done. I'm sick of it. And these are as Bernie supporters were sick of it. You can imagine how Clinton supporters feel, or those that are sort of neutral or on the fence. It's wearing thin, and it's getting old.
The only people who are in support of this... are people who are hard, fast Bernie supporters who think that the world will end if anyone other than he gets elected to be the...
And anything. Again, this is the vast, vast minority of actual Bernie supporters.
I mean...
They are just happen to be the most vocal and well-traveled and have the biggest presence on social media. Poll after poll shows this is a vast minority. And like you said in the last show, I have no interest in kowtowing to these people.
Nope.
If you want to be an anarchist and a nihilist and write in Bernie or vote for Jill Stein or sit it out, go ahead.
Just
I don't
go
give
ahead.
A crap anymore.
I'm just not going to. I'm just not
going
I'm just
to engage.
Done with you. I don't care. And what saddens me is that I am losing so much respect for the man, for Bernie Sanders, who I...
Yeah, he doesn't seem to be able to rein it in.
No, he isn't able to. And he's listening...
And I'm
either,
wondering what
he's... either doing it or he's listening to people that are telling him to do it, which is like this crazy, I'm going to win and at any cost and I'm going to... debate Donald Trump.
Well, I'll get to that in a second.
Gonna,
but before we get to the Trump debate thing, which
I am so tired of Bernie Sanders right now.
I'm trying to understand what his goal is here. What is the end game? And I keep thinking it's to push as much influence on the new Democratic platform as possible and to push Clinton as far as he can. But he's already done that a long time ago.
So now it's like it almost feels like it's vindictive.
It is. It's like, yeah, we could make that argument 6 months ago. And he did that. And he did a great job at it. And I applaud him.
Came way closer than anybody thought possible.
Yeah.
But look, there's a chance this all fizzles away in another couple weeks when he loses California and he loses New Jersey. And there's no mathematical miracle in sight. You know, but he, because there's been rumors for the last few days that there are the back channel negotiations that are going on and they're working towards an end to this, but then it doesn't feel that way when some of these other news stories pop up. When he starts
running his fucking mouth and talking about Hillary Clinton and talking about how awful she is and like...
Kagro and Greg Dorkin made a pretty good point this morning because a tweet that caught fire was... Bernie Sanders said last night at some campaign stop, or maybe it was this morning, Hillary Clinton is being very arrogant by calling herself the presumptive nominee, or just saying that she's going to win or she's leading or whatever. But if you're losing and saying that you're still going to win, that's not arrogant.
At least he didn't call her something other than arrogant, I guess. At least he didn't call her ambitious or bossy.
Shrill?
Or shrill. At least he hasn't gone there yet.
Yeah, he hasn't gone there.
With Jeff Weaver at the helm, God knows what's happening next.
I've tuned it out, and that didn't even like make me mad at this point. I'm just like, oh, this won't end.
Just stop.
But okay, here was the news for the last couple days. Bernie reached out to Trump and said, hey, let's me and you debate.
Yeah. Why would that happen, by the way? First, he wanted to debate Hillary.
In California.
Why would she do that? No.
There's no reason for her to do that. So she said, we've debated more than enough already.
What else is there to say? And also, I'm not really running against you anymore. You're running against me, but I'm not really running against you.
Right. No, she's running against Trump.
I'm running against Trump, right, who is going to be my opponent in this election.
So it would make no sense for her in another debate.
Why on earth would I do that? To all the Bernie supporters out there, I know that you think that would be fun, but you have to see it from the reality of the situation.
Well,
like,
let's get back to Bernie Trump, no. Because I knew how this was going to go down. I said, there's only one angle that Trump could work here, and Bernie will never let him get away with it, and that is to be buddy-buddy and just get into a whole let's both crap on Hillary Clinton. Bernie wouldn't have gone along with that.
Nope.
So the first thing was like, okay, well, I'll do this debate, but $10 million has to be donated to charity. I said, okay, well, that's his out, and we know how good Trump is now with his promises to donate money to to charity. I'm like, okay, well, now he's gonna. That's his way to weasel out. And then today he just said, ah, fuck it, I'm not doing it.
Trump did. Not Bernie.
No, not Bernie.
Trump said, no, I was just kidding about that.
But this whole idea, so I'm not going to spend too much time on what it would have meant and how it would have gone down. And I would have watched, obviously, and it would have been interesting. But
purpose? That was Trump's thing. He was like, it would make for great television.
Well, right.
And you're like, isn't that the whole end game of your campaign, dude? It would make for great television?
Right. If the two guys who are not going to be president left in this race want to get up and have a debate, I guess fine.
I guess talk in an echo chamber to each other about how you're not going to be president. That's fine, but that doesn't need to happen.
But
actually,
does it? I hate to say this, and I'm probably going to get some hate mail from Bernie supporters. isn't Bernie setting up this whole me and you debate thing remind you a little of Ted Cruz naming Carly as his running mate?
Right? I mean, it does smell of desperation.
Very presumptuous.
Yeah, it does smell of desperation, and it does smell of I need another news cycle. And
we know how that ended a week later, and this is going to end the same way a week later.
Yeah, because Bernie's point, the thing he's been saying is, well, Hillary's numbers are really down and people like her about as much as they like Trump, which is not true and not going to be true in a month. And so wouldn't it be great if I debated Donald Trump so that we could see, because my numbers are so high and his are so low, and we could finally prove that I'm the better person.
Right,
to
right.
Beat
what
him.
What
and
he was trying to do is like, let's show the country what it would be like. A Sanders versus Trump head-to-head matchup.
What it would be like if I was in a fantasy land and Rachel was going to be the president. I'll go debate Donald Trump right now. Like, if you're listening, Mr. Trump.
And you'll win.
Why not? Yeah.
But I think one...
Completely. And I'm still not going to be the fucking president. Okay. Well, I can debate Donald Trump all day long, and so can Bernie Sanders, and so can anyone else.
Yeah.
I'm not going to actually be the president, though, so it doesn't matter.
Well, one thing this does do, I think the precedent that this sets, and Kagro picked up on this, and Rachel Maddow picked up on this, and Chris Hayes picked up on this, and I picked up on this. I am not convinced for a second that Trump is actually going to debate Hillary.
I know.
He'll find some excuse, or he'll just say no.
He'll just say, I don't need to.
Right.
I'm not going to. I don't feel like it. She's not worthy of my time.
Whatever. It doesn't matter what the excuse is.
It doesn't matter. He's not going to, because why on earth, in the same way that Hillary doesn't want to debate Bernie at this point, why on earth would Donald Trump want to get on a debate stage with someone with this sort debater. Of acumen of Hillary Clinton?
Right.
He's going to look like an amateur that he is. He's going to look like the bigot that he is. He's going to be exposed for the fraud that he is. There is no reason, there is no planet in which Donald Trump benefits from a debate with Hillary Clinton.
Now, his team or his advisors might strong arm him into it or just convince him.
If I'm his advisor, I'm like, don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
I mean, there's no rule that you have to.
No.
Again, like releasing your taxes. It's just customary, which he's not going to do that either.
No. He's not going to release his taxes.
But see, all of this is debate Hillary Clinton. This is all academic because he's not going to be president.
Right.
Right. Like, if this was, if you believed the polls that they would actually be, you know, this close when we're, like, say, in October, then this would be an interesting thing. Like, wow, you're really gonna maybe elect a guy who refused to debate and refused to release his taxes and doesn't know anything about anything. Well, but he's not going to be president.
Well, no, he's not. But I think what's really interesting is, what does that look like to Donald Trump's supporters?
Well, they don't give a shit.
Well, I disagree. I think that they want to see him tear her down and be a sexist asshole and, like, do the thing.
Yeah, but...
And they don't care. They're not going to understand the sort of minutiae of why that's bad for him or why...
No.
The optics of how badly he would lose. Yeah, they're going to look at him and they're going to say, you were too small of a man. Like, they're still going to vote for him, but I think that their estimation of him is going to be a little lower because
I think you underestimate how sycophantic they are. And when Trump
But hang on. Let me finish my sentence. So,
sure.
So I think that saying, I don't want to debate Hillary Clinton for those, because he has such a specific set of supporters that are, like, white, older men.
And younger white men, too.
Mostly white dudes who regard Hillary Clinton in such a low esteem that him saying I'm not going to debate her, and he can make up all the reasons and maybe they'll believe it, but there's going to be some of them that are going to be like
disappointed
and sort of like that was a pussy move, dude.
Maybe,
you know what I mean?
Maybe, but I think for the most part most of them will buy whatever bullshit reason he spits out and go,
exactly.
He's not worthy of sharing a stage with her, and why listen to her lies anyway, and whatever he says, they'll
eat it up.
They'll parrot.
But there's going to be some portion of them, I think, the same reason he's not releasing his tax returns, because I think that he's not
nearly as rich as he says.
That in the same way that, like, there's going to be a double down effect of, like, I can't take her on. I will lose. And they're going to pick up on that, I think, somehow. They're going to go, like, why don't you tear her apart on that stage? Why don't you humiliate her?
Because
he's going to
do it on Twitter all day.
Yeah, but...
And that's good enough for them.
I don't know. I think there's a thing about, you know, doing a debate that, like...
And Trump knows he will be emasculated on a stage against Hillary
Clinton. That would be worse for him than the idea that he... can't handle it.
Maybe he could be wrong. And maybe he will. I mean, he's going to say he's going to debate her. We know that. And, of course, the Beltway Press will just take that at face value and believe it for whatever reason. But he's not. But ultimately, it won't surprise me when he backs out.
Completely.
Like, I knew from the second when they talked about this Trump-Bernie debate, that's not going to happen.
No.
No, it's not going to happen. No. Sounds fun. It's not going to happen.
No.
Trump's just going to back out.
Yes.
And he did.
Yes.
And it took, like, two whole days.
He literally said, like, oh, I was kidding.
I don't just even what know Trump what he says said.
He said
he's kidding.
I was just kidding. That was a joke.
You sure he wasn't referring to his whole campaign?
No, I'm not sure.
Involving punks,
no,
finally.
No, I'm not sure about that at all.
I'm still not discounting that. I'm not either. I am not discounting the idea that at some point between now and November, he just pulls the plug on the whole damn thing.
And says, like, suckers.
Or something.
Like, you seriously, I said all that
or
shit?
Or there's some family issue or some, you know. I
don't know. I mean, I don't want to get too conspiracy crazy, but, like, yeah, I think that too. But I really think, like...
No, I'm not saying it'll happen. I'm saying it wouldn't totally shock me.
Nothing this man does anymore is shocking, including... not releasing his tax returns and not engaging in a debate with his opponent.
This is the Trump dilemma. Trump wants to win the presidency badly. Trump doesn't want to be president.
That's exactly right.
And I think he's still resolving in his mind how to do that?
Both. How do I be a winner and not actually have to do the thing?
Maybe win and then say, have a mystery illness and bow out, and then Vice President Duke or whoever takes over.
Who fucking knows?
Well, again, and again, I thought Susana Martinez was on a short list, and now he's burned that down. Although the way these Republican politicians have been going, would it surprise you for Trump to call Susana Martinez all these horrible names, then pick her as VP and her to say okay?
Yeah, no, that could totally happen.
Because that's also a power trip thing for him, too.
Yes, completely. I mean, Marco Rubio, let's talk about that for a second. The turnaround. This man.
But did that surprise you at all? We all saw that coming.
Nobody saw anything coming. So Marco Rubio is like, he's not to be trusted with the nuclear codes.
He's a disaster.
He's an imposter. Nightmare. He's a nightmare. He's horrible.
He pisses his pants and has a small dick.
And he has tiny hands. And he's like, I would be honored today. He's like, I would be honored to be able to speak on behalf of the new whatever. And I'm like, oh my, so it's done. Like, and this is partly why I'm so pissed at Bernie. The Republicans have fucking Donald Trump, okay, as their nominee. And they're like, it took them 2 weeks, but they're like, ugh, all right, fine. We have Hillary Clinton, who is amazing. And we aren't there yet. Because fucking Bernie Sanders won't give up the ghost. He won't stop with this nonsense. So now the Republican Party is unifying behind a person that no one wants to be the president. But they're unifying because it's the party. And we're over here bickering over nothing, even though it's obvious that he has no chance of winning.
Because no lifelong Democrat like Barney Frank has enough true progressive
ideals
cred
for fucking Bernie bros. So let's just keep fighting
for Bernie
over
himself.
Here. For, it's maddening. Let's just keep fighting over here and
no,
let
it's
them
sad.
Unify.
Not,
and then
no, no, no,
we'll just tear each other apart. This is what we accuse them of doing.
Disclaimer, not everybody on this podcast, not our whole team feels this way, but Rachel
Correct.
And I feel this way.
Correct.
And we've got the microphone right now.
Correct. I asked
and we're over Bernie. It's like, I used to be very moved by this man. I mean, even
me
up until a few weeks ago.
Me too.
I could tune into his speech and I'm with him and I'm excited. I'm like, yeah, take it all the way to the convention. Let's push for everything we can get. And now it's just like, oh my God,
you have to stop.
I'm done.
You have to stop.
I'm done.
I mean, everyone knows I was super conflicted. I have always loved Hillary. I love her now. But I've always loved Bernie, too, and I fucking caucused for him, and I supported him, and I think he got done what he needed to get done about 3 months ago, and I think he needed to stop, or at least shift his message to not attacking her, and when he started attacking her, when it was clear she was going to win, and then when it's gotten worse,
and
like,
he's doubling and tripling down,
and now the superdelegates should change and support him, and... all the, and he's going to sue Barney. Barney Frank? Are you fucking kidding me? Like, oh, good. Let's attack John Lewis and Barney Frank because they're not good enough progressives for you. Stop. You're done. In my estimation, you're out. Like, that's it. I'm so done with Bernie Sanders. And it's sad for me because I really loved him. But this is completely like, I'm done. With Bernie. I'm done. Like, and again, you're right. Dana disagrees with us. I think probably Brenna disagrees with us. Don's always been in the Clinton campaign. So
I am not saying he should stop campaigning. I'm not saying he should not take as much power to. I'm saying Hillary Clinton has offered tones of reconciliation and compromise, and Bernie is not, and Bernie's the one who's losing. These things don't add up. And again, if you just couldn't work within the Democratic establishment, then you should not have run as a Democrat.
And okay.
You can't have it both ways, correct, Bernie. You can't.
And let's talk about this craziness that's been floating around in the Beltway about how Bernie Sanders is going to run as an independent.
No, he's not.
And then there's also going to be a conservative that's going to run as an independent, and we're going to have a four-way race, and what's going to happen?
This isn't the pundit's wet dream.
Exactly. And it's also in this, like, especially for conservatives, they're really, like, having a wet dream about this. That, like, well, nobody wants to vote for Hillary, and nobody wants to vote for Trump, and Bernie's really popular, so he'll run, and then we'll just run someone against him, and we'll make it a two-way race outside of the party politics. And I'm like, hey, guys, did you remember that the Electoral College is a thing?
Yeah.
Because I'm sorry for all of you out there who think we should have three or four parties and we should be a parliamentarian system like in Europe or whatever you think. But the reality of the American political system is that you cannot win the presidency as a third party because we have the Electoral College.
So if you forgot about that and you've been following the caucuses, remember winner take all? That's how the Electoral College works.
So the Electoral College is sort of like a bunch of superdelegates. And they essentially elect the president. And they almost always, with the exception of like two elections back in the 1800s, vote for the person who won the popular vote.
Here's an example.
However, they have ultimate control, just like the superdelegates do in the Democratic Party.
Right.
So if the Electoral College decides that the American people are stupid and they elected Donald Trump, there is still a possibility that the Electoral College would be like, nah.
Well,
not doing it.
Not exactly how that works.
But it's possible.
No. Well, here's the essence. In case you really forgot your 8th grade civics, Colorado has, what, 9 electoral votes?
I don't know.
Which doesn't sound like much, but it's important.
Yeah, but it is. Mm-hmm.
So those 9 electoral votes, if Hillary Clinton gets 1,000,001 electoral votes.
Yes.
Or no, 1,000,001 votes.
Yes.
And Donald Trump gets 1,000,000, Hillary Clinton gets all 9 electoral votes. It's not proportional.
Correct.
It's winner take
all.
Correct. And then if Bernie Sanders runs as a third party and he gets 999,000, and Gary Johnson gets 995,000, they get as many as Donald Trump, 0.
Correct. Yes.
Which they're not. Well, Gary Johnson's running, but he's not going to carry any states, obviously.
No.
My friend Raul may vote for him and feel better about himself.
Come on the podcast, Raul.
Yeah, we'll get
Let's
him.
Let's talk. But there is some discretion within the Electoral College. As noted, and I think it was like the 18, I'm going to have to look it up, election where, is in the 1800s, the late 1800s, and there was a disagreement about the Spanish-American War, and there was like this, all this backroom dealing, and they got away with it because of the Electoral College, and people like rioted, and it was crazy, but it ended up the way that it ended up, and
yeah, but if Donald Trump has more electoral votes, he's going to be the president.
Probably.
Right, definitely. Rachel, come on. You're just as bad as them now. Oh, it's going to be a brokered convention, like, and Paul Ryan's going to run to the rescue on the fourth ballot. No, if Donald Trump has more electoral votes, he's going to be president. Fortunately, that's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. It's not. Nor is Bernie. Nor is, like,
Gary Johnson or Jill Stein or Santa Claus.
Hillary Clinton is going to be the next president of the United States.
And that pisses a lot of people off.
Okay, so go be mad. I don't care. I'm tired of this. She's not the devil. She's really pretty great. And, yeah, you can disagree with her on a lot of things. And here's my thing. Okay, so Obama was very beloved as a candidate before he became the president. And he had all these ideas, and he was this very optimistic, very sort of like hope and change guy.
Yeah, but he inherited a tanking economy.
He did. And then He's been president for 8 years.
Turned it around.
He did. And a lot of the things he said he was going to do and a lot of the positions he held as a candidate were not who he was as president.
Not exactly, no.
Particularly around war and foreign policy and that kind of stuff. Yeah, he said like Hillary Clinton was too hawkish. I always tell my dad, who's a conservative, you know, Obama's not my boyfriend. Like, I love this man, and I think he was a tremendously good president. But there's a lot of stuff that he did that he that was not part of the Hope and Change platform.
Yeah,
and
drones weren't part of the Hope and Change
platform. No, they sure weren't. So, but the moral to the story of that is that, you know, it's not like we have androids that we create as the perfect presidential candidate. Whoever we elect is a human. And Barack Obama was, he's a great orator, and he was, I think, a great president, is a great president. Also had his flaws. Hillary Clinton, you may not love everything about her, but I urge you to think about the greater good. And think about, like, you loved Obama, you thought he was going to do all these things, he did some of them. You hate Hillary, you think she's a fraud, you think she's awful, but she's going to do a lot of good stuff. Donald Trump? Come on. There's nothing...
Well, they're going with that Susan Sarandon theory that worked so well in 2000.
Oh, my God.
That Donald Trump will be so bad, that'll spur everybody to join the socialist revolution. And because Al Gore is just... He's just as bad as George W. Bush, so...
Yeah, and how did that work out? Did Al Gore turn out to be just as bad as George... No.
Everybody has amnesia. It's like the 8 years of George W. Bush didn't happen. And literally, Susan Sarandon is saying the same things she said in 2000. Yeah. And she's got people going along with her. Sean King, and I'm going to talk about Sean King for just a second.
Yeah, please.
Sean King has gone off the deep end with his I'm going to start a new party whatever thing. But I'm not going to hate on Sean King because Sean King brings so many important stories to the forefront.
I really have a lot of respect for him. And this is happening
with systemic racism
exactly
all the time.
Right.
So I forgive him.
I've got a lot of feminists, too, that I really have a tremendous amount of respect for that are going off the deep end with this Bernie thing. And I'm like, I'm just going to not right now with you because we're on the same side and you're having a moment and I'm going to let you have it. And then you're going to come back to the thing and we'll be fine. But, like, right now, I can't talk to you. I can't talk to you, Sean King.
Well, it's like tonight on Twitter, Sean King and I just totally spaced on her name. Joan, who used to be from Salon. Joan, I want to say Joan Collins. It's obviously not Joan Collins.
Walsh.
God. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. Joan Walsh and Sean King, of all people, got into a Twitter beef tonight. And I'm just like, I'm so over this. These people
have
fought
everything in common.
Everything in common. And have fought so hard for so many important progressive ideals on race, on feminism, on equality. They are teammates, and now they have a Twitter beef because of this stupid effing Democratic primary that's over, basically.
It should be.
And it's like, what kind of world are we living in? We're talking about trying to get Barney Frank kicked off the DNC, the committee, and we're
going against Donald Trump, and Joan Walsh and Sean King are fighting about, like,
about nothing.
What is happening to the world? It's crazy making, and it has to stop.
It has to stop,
Trav. Like, I am
so what do we got?
Done.
June 3rd, June 7th, we finally have Jersey in California.
Yeah.
And then at least the press can stop pretending.
There's going to be anything other than Trump Hillary.
Right.
I'm sorry, but that's it. And I'm sorry if that pisses you off and you don't want to vote. That's fine. I don't care anymore. Like, I'm just so done. We'll take our Democratic voters and we'll win, and we'll take all the people who don't want Donald Trump to be president and we'll win handily. And you can throw chairs and you can throw fits and you can yell at me on Twitter and I'm still going to win. And you can just step out of the political process for the next 20 years again and it won't matter.
Or round up all those people and become precinct committee chairpersons.
Like, are we going to have that now? We're going to have, like, the new left, which is, like, the gross Tea Party of the Democratic Party, which is, like, we're just going to tear everything apart and never let anything get done because we're just angry. Like, I just,
well, my point is, if they actually put in, if they actually put in the work to make the changes they want,
well, they won't. So it doesn't matter. Again, you don't matter. I'm sorry, but unless you want to actually affect change and do something positive,
again, call people names on Twitter and talk about anarchy and throw chairs at convention halls, or you can join rules committees and become a precinct committee chairperson and be on the rules committee and actually affect change the way we are trying to do.
Yes.
And then talk to me.
And man, it's boring, but it's and really important. It's boring
and it's time consuming.
Yep.
And you're like, well, or if your argument is, okay, well, the Democratic Party is so in the pocket and far gone and corrupt that we have to start our own party. Well, go ahead. or join the Green Party.
Sounds See, great.
Who was making this point? I think it was Dan Savage was making this point about the Greens the other day.
Mm.
And he didn't have it completely correct, because he had a voicemail from this chick, I think in Kansas, who was like, I can't stand Donald Trump, but Jill Stein is great, and how come you never talk about Jill Stein? And he said, well, what is the Green Party actually doing, especially on the local and state levels? They do jack crap. And he's partially right. There are some Greens here and there that are on city councils and on some state legislatures. But as like a political progressive force nationwide, no.
No.
No. Every 4 years, they throw a tantrum and run a candidate to muck up the works. But, you know, where are they in the state houses and the local houses? Where are the Greens there? And they're basically absent. And he's absolutely right about that.
Yep.
So don't talk to me about Jill Stein unless the Greens are going to do all the things on the ground at the local and state levels.
That the Democratic Party has done.
That the Democratic Party is trying to do.
And we should do more of it. And we are the most critical of the Democratic Party in terms of our failure as a party to, you know,
mobilize. Oh, they bring about a lot of this on themselves, certainly.
But it's not like the Green Party is stepping in and taking up the mantle and doing something great. They're just...
No, every 4 years they
cause a stink and people are like, I'm gonna vote for Nader and blah. It makes me want to puke, and then I'm like, great, you want to have another George W. Bush? Vote for Jill Stein.
Right.
We'll have Donald Trump this time though, which will be even more fun.
I mean, you had to get worse than a George W. Bush for
literally
us to feel a little bit safe about not having these people totally ruin it for us, which they might. They still might.
No, there's a possibility.
I'll have much bigger worries than thinking about this podcast and having to eat my words if there is a President Trump and you guys get your way.
Oh, we'll be gone. We'll be podcasting from a different country.
From Tijuana.
Wherever we decide to go. We've all decided.
From Costa Rica.
All of us. The whole team. We will not live in this country under Donald fucking Trump. I'm sorry. I just can't. I can't. I won't. Not like
doesn't
George
it kinda
W.
Get,
Bush.
Doesn't
like,
it kind of get you sick how the punditry seems to really want that President Trump just for all
just
the headlines
of the news.
And the stories?
And I'm like, what about the actual world and the people living in it?
Yeah, fuck them. I got deadlines.
Fuck them. I've got good news
coverage
now. I got
circulation.
Mm-hmm. It's like when Barack Obama was definitely going to be the president and Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert were still like super huge, right? Mm-hmm. And they were like, are you guys going to be out of a job if Obama becomes the president? And this is like, I think it was a Rolling Stone interview. And they said in unison, his dad was a goat farmer. And what they then talked about was like, there's always jokes to be made at everyone's expense.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly we would like to have a better president of the country. And if that puts us out of a job, we'll be okay with that. Like, we can still make fun of his name or his dad or whatever, but like, it's not going to be, you know.
Oh, Jon Stewart. He picked the wrong time to retire, didn't he?
Well, for him, he picked the right time. But he is doing an HBO show coming up soon.
Oh, good.
A little like John Oliver stuff.
Well,
anyway.
That's about going to wrap it up for us.
Yeah.
We are going to probably do another podcast this weekend with a local guy who's going to be going to
the National
Philly,
Convention
right?
in Philadelphia. Yes. Yeah. So.
And he's a Bernie guy, right?
He is, absolutely.
So we'll
have some heated...
I don't know what he's going to say.
I don't either.
We've never talked to him before.
No.
So.
I mean, I've met him. And I think we might need to have Dana on that one because Dana and him are met at the caucuses and conventions and all the things. So we'll probably have a couple of of guests, those two.
Yeah, we have a bunch of guests we want to get lined up. We have another person here is running for the state house who is interesting that we would like to talk to. We met her at the Planned Parenthood get together.
And then I've got a couple of trans people lined up to talk about bathroom bills and different things because I think we need to hear their voices instead of you and I yelling and screaming about it. Let's listen to what they have to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we've got some Supreme Court stuff again. And so we've got lots of stuff coming up.
Okay. So thank you, Netroots Radio. Check us out on Twitter at Irreverent Duo.
Hate mail, love letters.
Irreverenttestimony@gmail.com.
Yep.
You can hear us on Stitcher and iTunes. And coming soon, we are going to set up either a Patreon or a PayPal account if you want to donate to us to get some better equipment and be able to podcast more and all that stuff. But anyway, that's it for tonight. I am Travis.
I'm Rachel.
Stay active, stay tuned, stay involved, and unity. Hug. If you're a Bernie supporter, hug a Hillary supporter, even if you don't mean it. If you're a Hillary supporter, hug a Bernie supporter.
Even if you don't mean it.
Even if you don't mean it. Especially if you don't mean it. Okay, talk to you guys soon.
Good night.
Adios.
I took the